Muzi Maimane, it's really a privilege and a pleasure to see you here in Johannesburg, in a studio. You've been in the news a lot lately, I've noticed.
Sometimes tough times, it was quite tricky. It makes you realize how many South Africans live through crime and how crime has just become a normal part of our lives. But
what happened, for those who didn't follow the story?
So I had my family over in Abu Dhabi, and so we went out to a bar one to go grab a drink. I thought that's a great South African thing to do. And while I was there, three young men came in, guns blazing, held the whole restaurant down, took everybody's stuff, had everybody lying under tables. You realize how quickly crime turns. And so I was one of the people in the restaurant. And so they came to our table, they took stuff. We had to hand over things. But I'm grateful no one became heroic in that no one was trigger happy. And I'm grateful, funny enough, the ADT arrived much later, because had they been in the room, I think things can escalate quite quickly. So it was quite a difficult experience. It was quite harrowing in some ways, because in some ways it feels surreal, but you realize post that a minute either side of that, something wrong could seriously have happened. So I'm grateful. And I'm grateful that the police came, and I'm hoping that they do their bit. But it's one
good message that don't be a hero. I lost a friend in 1994, just after the election. He was trying to be a hero, a guy called Dave at Rotec. Same thing. He was in a bar, and guys came in there. And unfortunately, he's no longer with us because of that. So in those cases, just let it go.
Sure. And I think for me, and that's why I'm so privileged to be here, and you are able to reflect on your own journey. One of the more difficult things is that as South Africans, I think we've lost the sense of the injustice behind the situation. We almost now reason it from worst case scenario. So more and more people kind of go, hey, you must be grateful this didn't happen or that didn't happen, and it almost escalates to its worst degree, as opposed to going, actually, we shouldn't be living with crime. And actually, for those three young people, I actually hope they get arrested and I hope they get rehabilitated so they can do something. We've got to think about it that way rather than the other way around. But it's difficult. It is completely difficult. And I feel sorry for, we had an 8-month-old pregnant woman in the room. And so for her, it's quite traumatic to obviously go through that. It's difficult for the restaurant because this is an economic issue. Mm. People come and rob a restaurant. People stop coming there. And it's also difficult for the staff there, because to try and retain talented people who work in restaurants, once that risk escalates, it becomes harder to retain good people. So overall, and it's tragic what you describe about Dave, and I just want to plead that we've got to do more in fighting crime. It's an untold story, and our society suffers underneath it.
But Muzi Maimane nowadays is known for your movement, the One South Africa movement. I'm going to get there in a minute, but at our conference about a year ago now, when you shared with us that story about H.H. Hichilema from Zambia, and it's easy to go and watch again. It's on YouTube. How's he doing, the Muzi Maimane of Zambia, in a way, I guess?
Who, H.H. or myself?
Yeah, H.H.
he's doing a phenomenal job. Mm. You know, they say change is as good as a holiday, and change for Zambia has been better than a holiday. To be honest with you, their inflation numbers went from just 23%. Now they're dragging them down to just over 11%, which is still high, but it means that the indicators are heading in the right direction. He's cleaned up the bureaucracy, in that he's weeded out all, you know, because the previous administration had seriously successfully captured the state. He's gone out of his way to make sure corruption is not the order of a day. The Zambia is a country to watch from the perspective of saying even the generals who were doing things that were illegal, he's been managing to clean them out, and he's focused now on a clean administration. I think more than anything, they're starting to become fiscally stable, so there's new net investment coming into the country. And more importantly, I think from a regional point of view, if you think about the SADC region, HH is offering sobering leadership about the preservation of democracy, the rights of citizens, etc. So it's been a breath of fresh air to see to see someone who comes from business, who honestly is focused on what that nation can become. And I continue to spur him on and I wish him well. And I think it's great to know that the dividend of democracy, democracy may have its flaws, but the one greatest dividend is the fact that when you have a change of government, the next ones have to work harder if they want to keep your votes. And that's why I think before we forego the idea of democracy, as other parts of the world are doing, let's remember that actually it does deliver change and it's peaceful. And when it does happen, it can bring positive results for citizens.
This is so relevant today. It was relevant when we first discussed it about a year ago, because at that time it was a possibility that South Africa could have a open, more free enterprise-driven government because Zambia could do it. And no one ever thought Zambia would.
Yeah.
Now that Zambia is being successful in its route, perhaps South African citizens will say, well, the ANC can be replaced and it can be a better future.
I think, you know, change always moves in waves in certain instances. And one of the things that I left conference with, which was why that story was so episode, was that you'll remember Oliver Tambo actually went to Mozambique and then from there went into Zambia itself, and Kenneth Kaunda, then we can talk about Robert Mugabe and the change there, and then South Africa were last in the process. And what we're observing now, and globally is such is the case, is that you're starting to see it with HH. He's ushered in incredible change. There's been a lot of change now that's starting to take place a bit in Botswana. We see now a new government potentially there. Zimbabwe goes to elections next year in 2023. And I think as those waves of change start to take place, South Africa cannot be immune to that, because if you think about where we sit, the hypothesis of liberation movements or these governments that were built on the fact that we freed you lose credibility after 30 years. And I really think that citizens sitting at home who are feeling the pain of crime, who are feeling the pain of unemployment, who are looking around and going, our kids are being miseducated, are discrediting that hypothesis that the future of this country is safe in the hands of the ANC. And so I think there's a fundamental sense upon which people are going, how do we bring about that change? And that to me is exciting, because if 2021 taught us anything, which is that at the local government elections, the ANC couldn't get over 50%, it gives me the hope to believe that in 2024, that number could be exacerbated and ultimately we could see a new government. And I want to say this, and I know, Alec, many people have a fear about what would mean post the ANC. I do think that in some ways there's a positive sense upon which people can go, coalitions in fact do work, they are global phenomena, and more than anything, like the change in Zambia, we could see as good a holiday in South Africa post 2024 if we commit to working towards it now.
I did a bit of work a couple of weeks ago on by-elections in South Africa. Now, elsewhere in the world, in democracies, by-elections are very closely monitored because it gives you a feel for the temperature. We're going into the 2024 election, which is going to be a critical and a watershed one here. Yeah. But the by-elections have been interesting in that the ANC is falling significantly in each of those. I took a very rough average where their number went down from 46% in the 2021 November election. The average in the by-elections, there had been 30 of them by the analysis that I'd done, they were down to 41%.
Yeah.
So it's not scientifically 100% accurate, but sure, it gives you a feeling. But in those by-elections, we had two independents winning wards. Now, I know that this is your game, that you're now helping the independents. Did you have anything to do with Enoch Mgijima?
Yeah.
I think that's the old Queenstown.
The independents, yeah.
Yeah, the independent who won there. Or indeed, there's a new party called the Africa Unified Movement, which won in Habo Choy in Mpumalanga. Anything to do with you with the
South
Africa?
So the Enoch Mgijima one is one that we worked quite closely, because the umbrella body that they work under, they're called the Independents, which is led by Ken Clark, was effectively a way for us to franchise politics, as it were. Let's allow ordinary citizens to be able to run their own affairs and give their own candidates and be able to get people elected. So to me, not only have we now shown that, a bit like Uber, now you've got Bolt, you've got others, I'm okay with that, so long as the principles remain, which is that how do we get citizens to be able to be in charge of their own affairs. The proposition for 2024 is a lot different in that in some ways you've got to group all the very respective independents under one umbrella body, and that umbrella body needs to orientate itself towards saying communities must still nominate, elect and vote for, but they must operate under one umbrella so that you don't only have shared values, but you've got a shared vision for where the country has got to go. And I do think in many ways that is, for me, the next project that we've got to work on. Because even though the ANC drops, as the numbers you've indicated, it doesn't automatically mean that anyone in opposition to that can coalesce to over 50%. So part of the work that we're doing and thinking about is not only saying let the ANC drop, which it's not an anti-ANC message, it's just a maturation message. I mean, the Germans under the CDU have just lost an election. So even if you don't, you're not talking about hatred of the ANC, it's just that it's good for change, but you've got to ensure that the coalition that comes out is held together sensibly. It is over 50% and it is able to deliver on the vision for people. And many independents across the country are starting to see the sense that the national bill isn't going to be on their side easily. So therefore, it is going to be important that they work together to achieve the change.
I just want to reference those numbers because they are significant. The independent in the Eastern Cape won with 57% of the vote. Mm-hmm. The ANC previously had 37%. Where it was the incumbent. Yeah. But even more spectacular was in Mpumalanga, where this new local party got 47.5% of the vote, won the ward, which the ANC previously had 79% of. So there's a message happening. There's something happening here where people are getting, perhaps not directly, but getting the message that you're talking.
No, and the power behind it is that actually, all of us, what is innate in all human beings, I believe, is the need to have somebody who you know, who can represent you, who, when you are in trouble, you can call on, and you know that they're not here only in election time, but they'll be here with you all the time. And so I'm encouraged when I hear even just those numbers. And when I think about places like Thaba Chueu, and I think about some of the more rural centers, this is where the ANC has been historically very dominant. And I think that citizens there are going, what we don't want is this importing of candidates who come here during elections, tell us things. We actually want locally grown leadership that works for us. And actually, I think that's a salvation for democracy globally. And what is encouraging equally so is that if you look at even just another country like Australia, the recent Australian elections showed how independents were able to actually shake the political establishment. And so I'm quite excited, Alec, because I think the thing we could be able to get right in our generation is to do what, as South Africans, we know as just simply power back to the people. But it is really ensuring that democracy works for the ordinary person and you rescue it from the elites and give it to people to give expression to that. So I'm quite buoyed by that.
So going into the 2024 election, where is the One South Africa movement right now? And how much more work do you have to do to really make an impact?
It's a massive job that we're building towards. So the first thing is, going into any election, you need to be able to ensure that you've got structures all across the country, right? And we've worked out through the associations all across that we've been able to put a great footprint, whether it's in the Eastern Cape in Enoch Mgijima, whether it's in the Free State, Gauteng, everywhere, right across the country. So that's the first tick, if you like. And that was an important one because often you find political parties can quickly become regional or sometimes have a base and then they can't grow beyond that base. I'm on my way from here, I'm going to Limpopo, where I'm really looking forward to the work that the team is doing there. So
Where in Limpopo?
In Lewakgomo. Uh-huh. So I'll be there tomorrow.
Rural?
Yeah, rural. And we're building a phenomenal base there. In fact, Limpopo is one of our highest growing regions across the country, not only from an affiliation point of view, but equally so some of the public reps that are coming from there are incredible people. So that's the first thing. The second thing is we fought hard for the Electoral Amendment Bill to be changed. What it looks like they put on the table will make it hard for someone to be directly elected nationally because they've done what I'd like to say. They've said everyone can run the Comrades Marathon, except if you're an independent, you have to run barefooted backwards and no water, and hopefully you'll win. So they've complied, but really they haven't done a significant amount of change. So there are a number of issues we'll have to go, and they might be challenged constitutionally in court. So if I park that matter for 1 second and come back to truly what we'll then do, is that we've established and we're working on building an umbrella body that sits across, so that each of these independent movements can be affiliates of underneath. Communities can still sponsor their own candidates, elect them, and hold them accountable. But we know they can operate as a collective when it comes to parliament or their respective legislatures across the country. So that infrastructure has been built as we speak. And
that's groundbreaking.
We really think that, I personally think that every industry has been disrupted. Politics is next. And we'd hope that just the small effort that we're trying to put in could give us that disruption that we need. Because if we learn, we've learned some things in 2021. We don't want to repeat those in 2024. We want to improve on those. And furthermore, we recognize the fact that if we get it right, I don't want to sound brazen, but I do think it will be the very salvation for what democracy in and of itself is, because I don't think it's a unique problem to South Africa. I think democracy moving away from people is a global phenomenon. Now to bring it back to people is the most vital dynamic we can do.
You know, when we last had our convo, when we last chatted, I think many people might have thought, no, man, Muzi, what are you doing here? You know, you shoot, it's a moonshot.
Yeah.
But that moonshot is now very much closer.
Yeah.
And it does appear as though your ideas are getting more momentum. Are you seeing that within the One South Africa movement? Are you guys growing? Are you being funded?
Yeah, we are. Funding is always difficult, because I think funding is also a reflection of the global state of where people just don't have money to put towards particular projects. So you've got to work hard in your funding mechanism. And we pay the price of disaggregating and making sure communities actually own it. So ordinary citizens contribute at their own grassroots level. I've gone out on a fundraising drive, and I think people are positive towards the 2024 elections. But I'm not too worried about that, because it's cyclical. You kind of go through periods such as this one, where it's the in-between period. There isn't an election, you just post an election, now you got to build towards the next one. So we're building a war chest towards that, and I really believe that as South Africans come on board and give, you can always do with more money. We're up against a massive battle. The established political parties have a very simple story to tell, right? We're a party, give us money. Here in this instance, we're saying, no, you become part of the solution and contribute. And I think sometimes it's had to take re-education, which has its own costs, but I'm comfortable and confident that we'll raise enough ammunition towards 2024 to compete and compete strongly. We, you know, the big political parties will spend $1 billion in certain instances $500 million. So these are massive amounts. We've got to get enough to be in the field, compete well, and I'm grateful for what technology and data is able to do, because it just lowers the costs, but it increases your influence across various places as you interact with people on their mobile phones.
Tell me about the coalition and the role that you might be able to play in that post-2024, presuming that the ANC gets under 50%.
Yeah. Mine is to say, you know, I've had experience in the 2016 coalitions. You know, coalitions, firstly, are an important reality. We can't get away from them. Neither can we fear them. I think many citizens go, we see what happens in the Joburg Council and we see what happens in Gqeberha. But that's like observing a meeting, one meeting that happens once a month and presuming that's all that happens. Actually, that's not all that happens. Of course, that meeting may be chaotic from time to time, but in reality, what a coalition gives you is a sense upon which, A, no one party can capture the state. That's important. Secondly, that in negotiations of tariffs and delivery things, there are more voices in the room and you have to be more considerate to a broader range of citizens. And lastly, I think that if you've got national leadership that is committed to a project, you can be able to manage those coalitions. So the role I'd want to play is just be able to bring the respective role players, which we have. I've in fact got one of my proudest moments was being able to, I've got the signed document of all the political leaders coming together going, here are the principles we agree on, here's where we've got to go, and we ultimately will stick to that. And whenever there were difficulties, I was able to pick up the phone to any one of those leaders and go, we've got a problem here, how can we solve it? And I would hope to be able to play a similar role in 2024. The last thing...
On behalf of whom? Who would your constituency be?
Well, it would be this coalition of citizens who sit in the middle, who have voted in a hybrid model of both directly for independence, but also across the proportional representation under this umbrella body. That's who I want to
work. So would you be
for.
Back in Parliament?
Absolutely. That's the job, and I'm working towards that between not only for myself, but I want to bring more and more citizens who think like me. Citizens who want to sit in the middle. And when I say sit in the middle, not sitting on the fence, what I mean by the middle is people who are non-racial in their approach, who recognize that what we want is a country that works can deliver jobs. We want our kids to be educated. We want our streets to be safe. And we want a government that works. And there are millions and millions of citizens who sit there. They're not ideological in one sense. They are values-driven people. And they really believe in this country and they're scared of what they could lose if the thing fell apart. Those are the people I want to represent and work with. They're not people who want to burn the country, but they're people who say, how do we build the country? So we're working with them and we're building relationship with them to bring them on board. And they sit all across the country. So we get that right. And ultimately, as I've said, if the opportunity were to present itself, the ideal of not just only staying in Parliament, but also running for the presidency of this country is something that I want to do, not because I think I'm the most talented of the lot, but I do think if there's a grace and a gift for me is to say, how can I work hard to build, to bring South Africans together, put credible policy on the table, and actually coalesce with people, the best people, to bring change. And that's the role I want to contribute to South Africa as.
Are you still close to Herman Mashaba?
Yeah. I speak to Herman from time to time. I think what they're doing, especially in Johannesburg, is an important job. And I think they're doing well. But ultimately, he, like many others, are some of the South Africans that if we get things right, we must realize as South Africans that it's going to take willing South Africans and committed South Africans who are bound by values working together to bring change. And I would consider Mr. Mashaba and many others like him as one of those.
Because it's the story that you've outlined for us is very similar to what Herman was mentioning to me just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
However, Helen Ziller, who would also be part of the whole coalition, says watch out because it's not easy and not an easy road. And you can almost see there, and you're in a unique position when you look at what has happened within the DA, losing some talent. The DA's, I think Helen wrote on her Facebook page, there were over 100 black leaders who are working within the DA and very happily there. But recently they've lost a couple of big names after you departed as well. And to Action SA, and there's friction between the two. So how does a coalition like that, and say you're also in that coalition, how do you guys work together when you've got that history?
Firstly, you've got to bring things to three things. And I just came back from Germany to look at how coalitions work there. We've been doing
this. Were you with Helen on the same trip?
No. This was a separate trip.
She was also in Germany recently looking at the same thing. Yeah.
I've been dealing with the Dutch government in this regard. I've dealt with some of what happens in some of the African states. So there are some important principles we learn. Okay, the first is become less ideological in a coalition and become much more values driven. What's important here? Because you're leading society, you're not just leading political parties. Secondly, I think we've been working hard on a vision for what economic growth will look like. The itch that South Africans face that we need to scratch is what is the collective vision? And I would peg it at deliver 5% growth, make sure there's a job in every home. That must be the focal point. That's everyone has to do that. And then lastly, ensure that you can extract the sense of value by celebrating citizens in their diversity. Because coalitions fall apart when you undermine diversity. If you say we're a party for black people or a party for white people, you undermine citizens. And so where, to your point, it's whether it's Helen, Herman, all of them, one, they form part of the political infrastructure. The bit that I equally bring is what happens outside the political infrastructure. There's civic society, there's NGOs, there's businesses that must form part of the contribution towards building this nation. And if you just simply focus on the politics, then it's almost like trying to merge political colors and hoping for a soup that people can digest. But you've got to bring this other dynamic part of South Africa. This is the part of South Africa no one ever talks to. It's a fact that actually the people who are keeping this economy going are running businesses today, right now. That's what they're doing. They have to confront load shedding. They have to confront water shortages, but they're doing it. They're doing it in townships. They're doing it elsewhere. So we've got to bring those people together. And so to manage it properly, this is what I'm proposing, is that let that coalition from, if you like, actors outside the play come together and work towards garnering that middle cohort of voters to vote. Because I think that's an important part and they should become the anchor tenant. The second part of it is, rather than we sticking to the strict, and I think it's post the election day, you are given about 2 weeks to form a government, is to extend that a little bit longer. It's a bit of anomalous. One of the things that Germany gets right and all of that is that you negotiate for longer, but because the negotiations are long and deep, the commitment is deep and much longer. Whereas here, we kind of put these things together like scrambled eggs over 2 weeks.
What after, position can I have?
Yeah, after elections and people are tired. And so I would urge that we extend that period and deepen the commitment. Make sure that it's got binding contracts. And the second part, which is the counter rider, which is when you've got outside actors who are permanent observers of this thing, is that you've got to make all coalition agreements public. So that everybody knows what's in there and we can hold them accountable. Because at this point in time, I hear that Qabeqa has just signed a new agreement amongst the parties. None of us have seen that. That, to me, communicates a sense upon which if tomorrow the position changes, then we can just change the government without considering citizens. So we've got to do the hard yards of making sure it works, because coalitions are going to be our future and they safeguard what we're trying to do. So I've spent quite a bit of time doing that, and I think it's possible. I think that if people go into the negotiating table recognizing that there's a country that is... theoretically, not only we've got something to gain, but we've got a lot to lose. I think South Africans, we must never forget how beautiful, how incredible this country is. That it's the only home many of us have. We cannot lose it.
It's the only home many of us want.
Correct.
What about these new people who are emerging? There are a lot of independents, a lot of new voices who are emerging. Are they talking to you? Are they joining you? Because it appears as though, I take Zongezo Zibi as an example. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know where he's going to end up, but if he stood as an independent, he surely would have some constituency who would coalesce around him. Sure. Are you finding that?
Yeah. And we're having these conversations, right? So I'm not closed off to a conversation with Zongezo. I'm not closed off with a conversation to the other respective players. That's it. It's precisely why you organize around values, much less than ideology, because you can spend too much time overly invested in that. But values you can't reteach. You can't. Once we are misaligned on values, I might change my view ideologically. I might think school must run this way or an SOE must run that way, but I can't change my values. It's hard. And when somebody's going to verneker you, they're going to verneker you from day one, to use a South Africanism. So we are having those conversations. There is a better, broader coalition that sits outside the parliamentary space that involves actors who sit in communities, and as I outlined earlier. And Yeah, even as I sit here, I know just in my diary there are appointments and this conversation is ongoing. So I do think here's the hope for people is that come 2024, there'll be a much more coalescent alternative for South Africans to be able to go. They can put on the ballot. And even if there are two or three other players that sit in that, whether as independents or whatever, I just do think we have a common vision and a common value set. And that's important for people.
There's about 100,000 people have watched the interview that I had with Franz Cronje, who sat there where you're sitting now a few weeks ago. And he has always been a bear on South Africa. Well, not always, for the last 15 years.
Yeah.
And suddenly he's excited. Suddenly he sees a new dawn, a new political dawn, ushering in a new economic dawn.
Yeah.
What would you say to people who are skeptical or worse, cynical about a Franz Cronje having changed his mind, given what he believes coalition politics will bring to this country after 2024?
Firstly, I'd say to them, look at the numbers. Numbers tell us an interesting part about where global economies are going. Africa is an amazing opportunity. We've got just over 1.2 billion citizens. The median age is about 23 in the continent. When you look at developed economies, many of them are looking for opportunities upon which they can expand their footprint, and I can't see anywhere else but this continent. Secondly, I think that when I look at GDP growth numbers, sure, we've been lagging behind at about 1.2, 1.7%, but I think if we are really to introduce a new government that is able to sort out two things really, the digital infrastructure in this country and the energy infrastructure in this country, I'm convinced we could be able to add between 1% to 2% of GDP growth given those two things. Thirdly, I think that we've got incredible people in this country who are innovating. It's not accidental that maybe someone like Elon Musk is the richest man in the world and is a South African, but I do think that it speaks symbolically to the fact that we've got some great innovators within country. All they need is a government that will partner with them. The last number of years, with respect, one of the things we've done woefully wrong is that we've miseducated our kids, and furthermore, we've run a state that has been privatized, and we might cleverly call it state capture, but in truth, it's privatization of state resources, which is corruption. What we've got to do is that if we get a government in place that is coalescent, that cannot be able to do that because in a coalition, I think you could free up the potential of this country and produce legislation that is able to really maximize the assets. So I'm bullish. I'm much more, I think it's possible. I actually do think that if we deal with a political problem of a captured state by the ANC, I really believe South Africa could turn the corner in a significant way.
And to close off with, you will stand for president?
Absolutely. I think that the last number of years have given me an opportunity to think about what we need to do in this country. And I go into it believing strongly on the things that need to get done. If I'm willing to be, maybe when I led the DA, I kind of thought, what can the DA do? And maybe made some mistakes along the way. Now I'm much more ruthless at going, truly, there are a few things that we've got to do. We have to fix the state, because if the state doesn't work, it doesn't matter what economic policy you put on the table. We have to free up our assets in the economic space so that actually jobs can be created, and celebrate anyone who creates a job. We have to make sure our education works better. We can't pass kids at 30%. We have to up it to 50 and make sure that we produce a skills pipeline that will serve South Africa in the long run. And then I think around crime, we have to prioritize murder. We cannot obfuscate this issue, because I pick murder because I know if someone has committed a murder in a country where the conviction rate for murder is below 15%, we know that that person is also going to commit a rape. We know that that person is also involved in other crimes. Because crime is not committed by every citizen. It's by a few citizens. And if we target them well, we could do well. So to me, I'm backing a very strong, compelling vision around values of Ubuntu, a vision for economic growth, and ultimately being able to go, let the country, let the citizens rally together to build this country. So I'm much more enthusiastic and much more focused on tomorrow than I've ever been.
Muzi Maimane, the founder of the One South Africa Movement, and I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.